so sad. I don't know. I took away the D&D dice.
Nah, she fine. What up? Y'all know what it is over here, man. Rose Gold in the building. It's WAFest 2024. Everybody's going nuts, being introverted and extroverted at the same time. It's going fucking bananas in this bitch. But y'all know what it is, man. Don't evolve me. 2024. Oh, y'all missed a good impression of Bill Burr by Tom, but he'll do it later in the episodes. Anyways, cue the music.
Hello and welcome to Don't Evolve Me, the place like Ash, Ketchum, and Pikachu, we don't evolve, we just level up. Hello everybody, we are doing the D&D episode. We have Jackie here raising her hand. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
The color on the dragon.
Alright. We have Mike. I don't have a nickname for you. Mike, current DM.
Yep.
I don't know your last name.
I don't have a nickname for myself.
Oh.
Sorry. This is a problem in my DM in my D&D games as well. I can't really think on the fly. It's a real issue. How about Mike Bingo Rogers?
Mike Bingo Rogers?
Yeah. It has nothing to do with the bingo sign behind you.
I like it.
Ready to roll with it. Nice. We have...
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Alex Direct Hit Hunt.
Yeah,
joining
that's
us
me.
Again in the WAFest episode of D&D.
Amusingly enough, like my typical go-to name is actually Painting Poobah.
Oh, okay.
That's my thing. This is older than this is old, man. This
man,
is like
I
several
just,
years
like,
old. This is an antique.
Was like Tom Nerdier Chatfield is joining us as well, and I just was like,
hey.
I need a name. Oh, it's on the shirts. All right, we're going with it.
That's fair.
Can we be Tom drunker than you, Chatfield, this episode?
Yes, you can.
Okay.
Yeah, you're probably drunker than me.
We need to have a if Mike is also a DM, like we need a support group for DMs.
We do.
That is a true
that's
thing.
That's this episode.
Oh God.
we're just gonna bitch about players.
You three are have DM'd a game. We are prospective DMs. You can give us hints that could be part of it. Throw it in. Justin Intern Moser. Hello.
That's a no? That's a no.
I thought we agreed upon this nickname.
No.
Oh.
That was you and the ones to the right.
Gotcha. Justin, the man behind the chair, Moser?
That worked.
Okay. I would like to point
Justin,
out he's in
just
front of
Moser.
The chair.
True.
Mm-hmm.
Ringy.
Mm-hmm.
That's ringy.
All right.
Just staring at the veins.
Are you going
to... Do we need to leave?
Huh?
Do we need to leave? Step out for you two to... No? Okay.
Me and Moser?
No.
Oh, okay. You just can't look away.
Tom is staring at our photo that I will be posting of Lord Demcock. Gun-cock. I keep forgetting the gun part. Demcock rolls off the tongue very, really nicely.
A lot of things roll off the tongue with
that's
him.
That's because huh? I think some of the...
A lot of things roll off the tongue with him.
And this is exactly what most D&D sessions devolve into.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's tip number one.
Well, this is Warhammer.
Just the tip.
Yes, tip number one as a DM, always make dick jokes.
Yep. It's very true.
Moser, what we got first? What are we doing?
Welcoming the guest.
I did welcome the guest. Hello, guest.
I am sufficiently welcomed.
I have been properly welcomed.
Huh? What are you doing now? Oh, we already did that. We're moving on.
Okay. The campaigns you are currently, I guess, for you guys running.
Yeah.
So let's talk about current campaigns.
So I'll start. I'm running Call from the Deep on Roll20. That's a virtual tabletop. So we play online.
Yep.
Call from the Deep is a pre-written campaign. I'm going to add in some side stuff, of course. Most DMs will do that.
Yeah.
I think... One of my tips is pre-written stuff is really powerful. You don't have to feel completely bound to it, but it's really nice. DMing is already enough work.
Mm-hmm.
Pay somebody to write the story, the main story for you.
Yeah.
That works really great.
Fair. Yeah, that's so I've been, I know with Tom, we've been talking about the campaign that that we're a part of, that we're running. You know, as we talk about my character, Slom, as well as your character, Lilith. So I'm excited to have you on to be able to talk about the campaign, because I am talking about the journey as like each podcast episode.
Oh, okay. Excellent. So, I like that.
Yeah, I've been talking a lot about Slom and how he's a Triton monk who is, his backstory, something happened in the past that made him quit the army that he was a part of. I'm trying not to give too much away because Tom is here, even though technically I told you the backstory.
I think I know most of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And very much just a character who's trying to find themselves in the world. Like, they're... It's an interesting place because, like, the one that I have with Turlo is very much, he knows his character. Like, he knows who he is. So this character's trying to find themselves still.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think having a good backstory, you wrote an excellent backstory.
Thank you.
And I would suggest to DMs, future DMs or current, work on your characters with their backstory. Not necessarily directly, but at least have a little bit of back and forth with them. And then also set a general expectation for what you're looking for in a backstory as a DM. There's a lot of different ways to use backstories. Most DMs that I know of kind of fall into the camp where I am. I'm kind of in more or less the middle. I like to incorporate a character's backstory at least one or two points from it into a campaign. So as a character, you want to write a backstory that gives your DM something to work with, but also leaves them space to play.
Yeah.
And that's, again, assuming you're working with a DM like me, which, at least as far as the circles I run in, is where most people like to fall. Some DMs just kind of ignore backstories or don't ask them of their players. Some players don't even bother writing backstories, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. The best way to play D&D is the way that's best for you to play D&D.
Yeah.
You know, there's no judgment there. But as far as what I perceive, at least, as the general consensus, don't write an entire novel about your character, especially because they're low level when you're starting a campaign. Yeah. They haven't done anything cool yet. Running the campaign is where you tell the story of them doing something cool.
Yeah. I like that you said that, because that's kind of like how I felt after with Turlo and like with this new character, Slom, that I was writing. It was very much like, the story hasn't been told yet. The story hasn't been written. You just need enough background information to make it interesting. And so when I made the character, I was like, I wanted to be as open as possible. And it's a character, because we did an episode, I made five characters, and I had Tom judge them based on his DM history. And it's actually the character he gave it the highest rating.
Oh, a Slob?
Yeah. Mm. It was a tiefling that...
Yeah, and we had a little back and forth, like I said, while you were writing your character about the exact details of your backstory, you know, like, again, you had that point about the military service that you had been in as a character, and, you know, some things that had happened during that, and we, you know, had a little back and forth about, you know, what were the details of that, what was the kind of culture of the army that you were a part of was a big point question that I wanted to ask, you know, and you didn't come up with a specific empire you wanted to be a part of. It turned out I wasn't terribly interested in exactly who it was either. So we just kind of made up something random, more or less. And sometimes that works totally fine, like Mike Bingo Rogers. so,
nice,
you know, but now I have that to work with. You know, so you left me that space for us to work on together, and you left me some space where I can just kind of invent some stuff.
Yeah. I would say if you have, like, a really cool idea to throw at that way, it's like, oh, it works. It's a opening up character or history that you could throw in random characters in the past, and it blends in. There's no nothing that, like, trying to find the word, contests with it.
Yeah.
Let's get the other guys in for DM history and past. I think, Moser, you have a different idea. I think it would be a really cool concept. And yes, I'm changing this on the fly. Because we have three potential or DMs, two want to become DMs. It'd be really cool if we get, like, your guys' advice of, like, how to run a campaign.
Sure.
Or how to create characters.
You do everything perfect in the first time.
Yeah, don't fuck up.
Yeah, don't fuck this up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
No one will forgive you ever.
And plan it exactly how you want it to happen.
Yeah,
and
put everything...
Every interaction and every conversation, you are going to write, this is how this conversation
and
ends.
Then railroad.
You railroad the fuck out of them.
Yeah, drag your characters through, your players through the absolute most railroading you possibly can. Like, put them in a novel and then let them be there.
Yeah, I would 100% agree. Railroading is the way to go as a DM. give the players as little autonomy as possible because, I mean, then they know exactly what they have to do.
Yeah. And then if they don't listen, total party kill.
Start a new campaign.
This is otherwise known as writing a book.
Yeah. They also make a really obnoxious DM NPC that's way better than them at in every aspect.
Yes.
And have them control and micromanage everything they do.
Oh, man, it's the best. Dude, let me tell you what.
I love that as a player, man. Nothing gets me harder.
Let me tell you, as a DM, it's my all-time favorite thing. All-time favorite thing. My favorite thing is micromanaging fucking everything. It's the best.
So my question is, should we create characters for the players to play as? Like, hey, you don't need to write anything. I already got your backstory, everything.
Yeah, when we're at that point, I think we should already honestly. Write the characters.
No, I think I would disagree because, like I was saying earlier, I think backstory is important. You know, that's where you get from the character's backstory. You let it write on themselves so they're attached to it, and then you use that to punish them. Everything that they hold dear... You simply burn in
That's
front
great.
Of their eyes.
I was just like, wait Genius. A second, Mike, were you not understanding the sarcasm? Yeah. And then all of a sudden it's like, punch! I'm like, all right, there it is.
There it is.
My question was, like, is Mike autistic and does not understand sarcasm? And am I going to have a great, or is this going to be a really awkward moment on the microphone?
Might be.
That was a twist that I did not see coming. Well,
it was
done. I see your DM skills.
That was prime. Yep. Same way of just like, nope, it like did it go, and then all of a sudden, nope, he set that up very well.
Mm-hmm. That was good. I appreciate
I might have to retitle
that.
This episode, What Not to Do as a DM.
Yeah, exactly.
Or sarcastically, What You Definitely Should Do as a DM.
There you go.
Well, and in that realm too, there is a point where railroading becomes too much, but too little. If you don't give your players guide rails, they'll go off and do whatever. Sometimes that's what you need to have the story progress.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to handhold them through the entire thing, but you also want to put things in their way where it's like, hey, the main story is this thing. You need to pay attention to this thing here.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you have to railroad a little bit to get the story moving. Otherwise, players will just sit back and they'll... If they're comfortable, if they're really good players, they'll get comfortable in a location and they'll go, okay, I'm good here. I can live here. I can be here for a while and I can have some fun. It's like sometimes you got to kick their asses and kick them forward, but not let them realize that you're kicking them forward. That's the real skill. That's the real like practice skill of having your players not realize that you're directing them where you need them to go, without them realizing that you're. You know, you're doing that.
Yeah.
You give the illusion of free will.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was going to follow up with that. So one of my favorite things to do, so imagine you are going down a railroad, but then it branches off into, let's say, four different paths.
Yeah.
Right? But then again, each one of those four paths immediately meet up to the same railroad.
Yep.
So again, you're giving the illusion of choice.
Yeah.
But...
You're just a telltale game.
Yeah. I mean, you're you know... You are still having them end up in the same spot.
Yeah.
It's just how they choose to get there is. And, yeah, I think that's a powerful thing to have as a DM. Like I said, yeah, you need some guide rails.
Yeah.
And that's one of my favorite things to do is just, like, and even if, like, they choose a fifth rail that I did not even think of, I go, all right, we're going with it.
Yeah.
And then I figure out how can I incorporate this fifth rail that they did to kind of get them to roundaboutly follow the story in a general manner.
So I have a question of when you are writing, let's say, a campaign and it's more open, right? And there's like different routes that they can go that are like completely in a completely different direction where you want to take it. Do you like ever like not punish, but like... Yeah, you could do this, but the consequences...
Yeah, no, 100%.
There's always consequences to actions.
Yeah.
There's always consequences to actions. And to Mike's point earlier, being a DM's hard, having a pre-written campaign's great, having some extra flesh that you're able to put onto it is even better. And a lot of times you can find resources online where someone has written that. So I'm following something like that for Curse of Strahd. There was a person on Reddit, Mandy Mod. She had written a whole bunch of like fleshing out Strahd as from top to bottom. Here's how you add to it and not make things feel weird, mm-hmm. right? And having that as little extra bits helps. But punishing your players for finding a different route to do something is... I wouldn't necessarily say that's a bad idea.
Yeah.
But sometimes if they make a stupid decision, they're like, we're going to kill this person because we don't like them. Okay, you kill this person. Or in my campaign's case, they kidnapped someone that was the child of someone really high up in a town. And if you do that, like... There are real consequences to your character's actions that you will have to deal with. Mm. But I don't necessarily like, okay, you're gonna, you know, rocks fall, everyone dies. It's not that kind of punishment. But it's like, all right, well, you have consequences coming your way. You don't know what they are. You might not realize that they are there now.
Yeah.
But
I think of like a hypothetical, like, hey, you have to face this really tough person, and you're like very much expecting them to do so. And the party's like, yeah, no, we're going to go the opposite direction. And like, all right, we will just, this person will just meet you there then, type mm-hmm. of thing. Like,
yep.
But it's going to be worse now. It's going to be a surprise rather than you surprise them, they're going to surprise you now.
Or if they want to, you know, okay, you have a timed thing where they have to, I don't know, go to a town in time before a warlord gets there to slaughter everyone. And they're like, you know what? I really don't want to deal with that. Let's go over here and collect loot and, you know, kill a bunch of goblins. Okay. Well, they might come back and suddenly that village is gone. Mm-hmm. All the friends and, you know, whoever that they might have had there is gone. And then now the warlord is that much more powerful. And then whenever they go meet up with them later and be like, oh, now I want to deal with it. Suddenly he's super strong. Consequences to your actions, you know. Yeah.
I think it's about realistic, not realistic outcomes, not necessarily like consequences. So yeah, if you like you said, if you choose to do something, something is going to happen because of your.
Well, they're consequences, not punishments.
Right, consequences, yeah. Not punishments. Yeah, I suppose. Yeah.
I guess that's a better word for it than just punishments.
Yeah.
I was thinking I have a specific campaign, and I'm not going to talk too much detail because I might have one or two or more in part of it. Maybe more of a one shot, but I'm like thinking of a specific of like I can see them trying to get out and then like, yep, giant monster brings you back or something like that. Mm. In terms of you're gonna take some damage.
Yeah. No, yeah, there's yeah. I mean, as long as it doesn't seem punishing.
Yeah. Like spiteful.
Right.
That actually takes me to something that is like the number one thing that my advice would be for a DM is that you are not an opponent to your players. You are alongside your players. You are telling a story with them. You provide the context. You provide the background. You provide the story.
Yeah.
But it's not a us versus them mentality. It is definitely a you should be excited when your players defeat something. And or are fighting something and someone you should feel pain when a character goes down. Like there should be real feeling of this is they're in your world, but you are also alongside with them for as characters. A big thing historically too, DMs were always the opposition. The players were trying to beat the DM.
Yeah.
And I disagree with that. I think that the players are alongside the DM, and it should be fun.
Yeah.
That's what you're there for. The only time that it really matters for, like, rules and such, too, is in death. Like, when death is on the line, that's when everything gets by the book. Otherwise, fuck it. Have fun. Roll dice. You know, laugh and cheer and sing and cry and all those kind of emotions that go with it. Like,
yeah, because I think death does have to be a viable outcome in a D&D campaign, but you're right. You're not opposed to the players. And on the player's side, you should also, for players, know that most DMs are not in opposition to you.
Yes.
If they are, I mean, the DM is basically God. They can just kill you if they want to.
Yeah.
Like, you know, whatever. They're in charge of everything in the game. You know, it's okay to work with your DM. I know I have players that when they, new players, when they first start out, they try and, like, make secret plans and like they'll ask like really dodgy questions and try and eke something out. And it's like, if you just tell me what you'd like to accomplish, like if it's awesome, I'll probably help you get there.
Yeah.
Because my goal is for everyone to have fun also. And I want to have fun.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just, you want to, it's a weird position, like a a dualism of sorts that the DM has put in, where you want to challenge the players, you want to give them consequences that are, you know, believable, and you want to make the game dramatic. But you're not just trying to kill them, but you also don't want them to just walk through, you know, stab everything, yay, I'm the hero, and,
yeah,
you know, there's no risk or anything.
I feel like the job as a DM is to help the players tell the best story possible.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And I feel like, I guess like, that's the way I look at it. Like, yeah. You're working with the DM to tell a great story. You're not working against them. You're not in opposition. You are just trying to tell a great story. And if you have a DM that works with you, it's going to be a better outcome. Rather than if you're working against the DM or being like, I'm going to do the exact opposite of what I think the DM wants me to do.
And as a, it's also a relationship. Because you as the DM are giving trust that the players are going to do something similar. They're going to be in your world and want to explore the story that you're presenting.
Yeah.
And then as a player, you're trusting that the DM has you in mind as a storytelling aspect. You know, you are a player in their story. You're a character in this story. You want to shine as a character. And it's your job as a DM to make sure that every character feels like they are important in the world. And as a player, you're supposed to play along with the DM's story so that you can understand, like, where we're going, why we're doing this. If you try and just being in opposition, you're not being a good player.
Yeah.
Well, I think there's an important point for that also, you know, going back to the branching railroads, what you were saying about, the DM also has a responsibility to properly drive the story,
yes,
like you had mentioned earlier. You know, because sometimes, you know, I'll talk about what happened in our campaign just recently.
Yeah, go for it.
The characters came on this island. There was a imposter god, basically. They killed her. The townspeople, half of them are kind of upset. Half of them are kind of happy. Whatever. During that session, they had expressed a lot of interest in, you know, this imposter god, the god that the imposter was pretending to be. So during the week in between sessions, I hadn't really planned for it, so I wrote some stuff about this god, made a tiny little bit about the shrine of Tur and stuff. The session rolls around. I had a really weak motivation for them to go to that shrine, and that's totally on me. So, you know, the characters kind of rejected that storyline quite reasonably. Because as a DM, I had failed to make it seem like a reasonable thing for them to go do. So like I said, that's entirely on me. So I like what you were saying about the players, you know, they need to cooperate with the DM. But the DM also has to at least present a reasonable something to cooperate with.
Yeah.
I felt bad in that moment, too, because I'm like, I know there's a story there.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I don't feel our characters would do this.
Yeah, and that's perfectly reasonable. Yeah. Like I said, that was on me as the DM. I did not motivate that properly.
See, I was the opposite. I was like, why in the hell would we go and bring this body to a shrine when we clearly know she was an imposter? And was like, my character walked up, double-tapped her to make sure she was dead on the ground. And I was like, what would Lilith do now? She'd be like, where's my money and my rum?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and as a DM, you know, no DM is perfect.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to make mistakes. That's okay. You can admit them. It's fine. Yeah, I lost a little bit of work, and that's definitely going to happen to every DM. You're going to do work that just doesn't see the light of day, and that's fine.
What I've heard is, like, if you lose work or, like, if the players don't choose that storyline or you don't interact with it, it's always something that can be shelved for later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
For sure.
There's nothing that's lost necessarily. It's just lost in that moment. Or you might have prepared something and then it goes off the rails from what you prepared, and then you have to punt in that moment. Mm. I know, for an example for mine recently, I'm running two Curse of Strahd campaigns, and I had a character that had to show up, and it had to show up outside of a town. And I was like, ah, shit. I completely forgot that this character has to show up. It's important. It has to show up now so that the players have motivation in the future. How do I fit this in? And so I had this shack on the side of the road, and I was trying to make it interesting. And the players are like, cool. I don't want to do anything with that. And they walk right by it. And so what do? As the DM, I'm like, well, this is an ultra-powerful character. The shack shows up later. And my players were like, that's kind of railroady. Because I'm essentially telling them as the DM, go the fuck inside so I can give you the thing that you need. Because people are smart. They get it. They understand when they're being yanked around.
Yeah.
But I also, my reasoning, so some of my players were like, that was really railroady. Didn't really feel it. But, oh well. You know, it happens, right?
Yeah.
It happens to the best of us. Some of them were like, I didn't feel that at all. I was like, this is great. This woman's crazy powerful because her shack just like randomly appeared down, yeah, you know, a quarter mile down the road. Boom. So some players may not see it as a railroading moment. Some players will absolutely see it.
Yeah.
But try and avoid it is kind of the idea too. That was a failure on my part as the DM to plan ahead. Like, you know, you're juggling a ton of different stuff and suddenly you lose a ball and you're like, oh, I need that. What do? I have to fit this in somewhere. Where do I fit it in? It'll fit in here, and you try and make it work.
Yeah.
And that's a failure as you as a DM, but it's not the end of the world.
I would argue that it wouldn't be a railroad moment, specifically because you're not forcing them to do anything. You're representing the same opportunity.
Yes.
And you're saying, like, this is important, and there's that meta moment where, you know, people understand what you're doing. They understand, like, you're the writer of the story. Like, I understand what that writer's doing. I understand what that DM is trying to do. They want us to go in there. It's like,
It's not like I grabbed each character and I was like, so-and-so walks inside. You know, I didn't grab, like, okay, Blade walks inside the tavern because I as the DM, will that this character walks inside.
I presented it
twice, yeah. And the characters are like, or the players are both like, okay, all right, I see what you're doing. I get it, you know. So
a DM review, Jake. Have you felt railroaded by me in any of our campaigns? Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, what time? I want to know.
Session zero.
Oh, yeah, you have to railroad in session zero a little bit.
That is true. Session zero.
You literally have to. So, like, I chose to make a story out of it rather than just be like, introduce your characters and that's what we are.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Session zero, that's a fair railroad.
Well, in the moment, it was shit really went off the rails for what we were planning. Like, we were supposed to just go to the funeral, and then there was supposed to be a speech that kind of took the whole party. And in the middle of, like, this introduction, Ro was here.
Yeah, you guys were just like, we're going to go out here and cause a distraction and a ruckus.
Well, like, Ro, I feel like Ro was, like, trying to do your job for you.
Yeah, kind of.
Brand new character. He's like, I have a plan. We're going to get people together. And just had his own thing going on. And he's like, I need you, the rogue, to create a distraction with the other rogue.
Okay, so, but...
And my rogue was, Viking titties. True.
So, but to be fair, what would a king's royal guard do at a king's funeral if some drunk asshole came up to there and was like, hey, y'all seen any Viking titties around here? Look at that. Y'all got some fucking mead? They'd probably put the boots to him for being disrespectful, right?
Which...
So this was consequences, not punishment.
No, I'm not saying it was punishment. I'm just saying, like, in that moment, like, three of us ended up in jail. One started there. Three of us ended up in jail.
You guys kind of railroaded me into a corner.
Man, I was just following someone else's orders.
Hey, you know what? I still let you roll a strength check to try to get out of the five guards piling on top of you.
Also, gaslighting is a powerful tool as a DM. Tom just demonstrated it beautifully. Actually, the players railroaded me.
I'm the victim.
I am the victim right here.
I was going to say, you asked me if there was a moment.
Fair.
You
did, I agree.
You asked the question. And I said, yes, this is the moment.
That was railroady. I agree.
I'm not saying it wasn't necessary. Yeah.
In that case, too, as a DM, it'd be like, okay, This drunk asshole is coming up to a bunch of guards at the king's funeral. What are they going to do? They're going to be like, all right, citizen, get the fuck along. Like, you're drunk. You're obviously drunk. Get out of here. And the second time, they're going to be like, all right, you need to get out of here and, like, physically push them. Third time, if they take a swing, it's going to be like, all right, well, you're going to jail. Like, I've given you opportunities. Mm. I, as the DM, have been like, hey, player, fuck around and find out. You're in the find out stage.
This was the first time you did.
You did roll a natural one
first
on your
first roll
was a natural one. They put the boots to him a little bit, just kind of rough him up a little bit, toss him outside in the ditch.
Yeah.
He comes, sneaks in later, the same guy that they just put the boots to, and then gets recruited by the sorcerer and is like, hey, cause a distraction over there for some ungodly known reason. Why they were causing a distraction. Yeah, players were being players. And so
not,
I was like,
not break the, you know, our monk out of jail, not sneak, pick the lock, you know, not the obvious thing.
No.
It's never the obvious thing with the players.
Nope. You and rope, so, go take that rope, make a distraction with...
Players always have the absolute most back...
Sorry. Players always have the most back-end ideas of, like, I want to totally do this thing, and it's like, guys, all I needed to do was ask the guard, like, can you let her buddy out? Here's 10 gold. Like, that's all I needed. And the players are like, anyway, so we're going to burn this whole fucking city down.
Players do like setting things on fire.
They do.
Which is a great piece of advice for a DM, actually. I forget who said it was. There was a famous YouTuber. I forget the guy's name, but anyway. His advice was, when things start to get boring, set something on fire.
Yep.
I was going to say, the best thing for a DM to test what your players are going to do throughout the campaign, start them off with just a normal wooden door. Not locked, nothing.
Oh, yeah.
And literally see what they do with that door to see how it's going to go, so you can somewhat expect of, like, oh, well, here's something fucking simple. If they all of a sudden go, like, check for traps, can try to unlock it, and the door's already unlocked, and see what person's logical of, like, well, first I'm going to just check the door. That person is going to be, like, the person that you're like, all right, he's going to somewhat be the one that helps nudge everyone along, or that he's going to be the one that sits back and just watches them do stupid stuff, then just like, yeah, we just got to do this.
Mm-hmm. So I got a funny story about doors. This wasn't D&D, but this was Rogue Trader, which is the 40K role-playing game, right? So it's D&D, but set in the 40K universe, right? So they crawl through this dungeon. They fight a bunch of mutants. Our tech priest, you know, goes into this one room. He finds a key, right? 10 minutes down later into the dungeon, he finds a door. And he's like, well, is it locked? I'm like, yeah, it's locked. And so he's like, all right, cool. I take my power fist and I start punching down the iron door. And he's just failing upwards. He's just like failing, like just not doing enough to it. And I'm just like, I just wanted to scream like, you have a key. You found a key 10 minutes ago. Try the key that I gave you. And then the player's like, nope, we're going to burn it down. I'm going to set demo charges on this door. And then after I blow the door open, I'll be like, oh, yeah, hey, guys, there's this key I have. And he was just literally pounding on this door with his power fist. And I'm just like, Shane, you have a key.
It was Shane.
That is a Shane thing to do, yeah. That makes sense.
Maybe we could workshop something right at the moment for that. Yeah. Like, you give your players tools, hopefully to address... Yeah, hopefully to address a challenge that you're presenting.
That was a simple challenge.
Is, like, how acceptable is it to just go completely beta and be like, you have a key. You got the key.
Fair. Yeah. I think if it saves people time, it also depends on the campaign you're running and the players you have. But I would say that at a certain point, you have to be like, dude, you have a key. Try the key. Oh, hey, the key works. There you go. It's funny. You know, but if he, like, breaks out the power fist in that moment, like, all right, I'm going to punch it with the power fist. It's like, oh, and you just had an epiphany that you have a key in your pocket. When you're trying to get out your power fist, like, oh, hey, look, the key hits the ground. And someone's like, oh, what's that? Hey, look, a key. Weird how that works. Sometimes it is funnier the other way.
Yeah. Just hammering it.
Or just like someone else has an epiphany that they have a key.
And as a DM, that can be railroady to tell players what is going on. But I would say that you as the storyteller have to also be like, for the sake of time, this is what, like, your character is smart enough to realize that they have a key, unless they're not.
Yeah.
In that, you know, if they're dumb as a rock, maybe they don't. But there's probably some smartass that actually does remember that, oh, you picked up a key over there.
It reminds me of, like, the video game where you're, like, stuck in an area and you can't figure it out, and then you just, like, they have to, like, highlight where you have to go. Like, it reminds me of that moment. And, like, if you overuse it, it's a kind of a shit thing to do, but every once in a while it's like, oh, that makes sense. I didn't even think of that.
Yep. Players overthink things oftentimes.
Players have a lot going on as well. You know, they're trying to piece little puzzle pieces together. You already know what the full picture is. And I think, you know, that's something that I think hopefully I've learned, is that it's more or less okay to kind of remind players, like, hey, you know that thing you got, like, an hour ago?
Yeah.
That would be useful here.
Well, because in sometimes that's 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago in real time. Players don't remember that. You know, you as the DM remember that because you're like, oh, yeah, I need to write down that so-and-so has this thing so that, you know, they'll know. So you're reminded all the time.
Yeah.
Right.
But, yeah, a player might not remember because that was forever ago and, you know.
Or they forgot to write it down. They don't check their inventory.
Yeah, they're not a note taker, so they don't have any notes on it. You know, so.
Take notes.
Yes, take notes.
I've been trying to.
DMs and players.
Yes.
Take notes.
Okay.
I'm really bad about taking notes myself.
Tip 87, take notes.
And when you take notes, don't expect anybody else to, like, understand your references to Slog the barkeep from four sessions ago. Like, you still need to give context. The DM doesn't fucking remember it.
No.
Not a chance.
Who?
Unless it's one of the top five NPCs in the entire campaign. They have no idea who the shopkeeper was. They just made up a name on the fly. Or it's technically written down somewhere, but they don't know.
Jake, do you remember Turlo when he got to the port and he was like, what was the first thing you asked about the horses?
What color were they?
What color are the horses? And I'm like, fucking brown? And one's black and white? One's name is Steven. And he did, like, it was just one of those moments, like, I had that written down. But it was just the most random question. What color are the horses? What?
It fucking mattered.
It mattered.
It mattered to the character.
Turlo wanted the prettiest horse.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's fair.
I mean, oftentimes it's the joke of, like, the veteran player. There's a whole video on it that I have reference to, but it was like a, you know, it's this guy, a goblin shows up, and the veteran player goes, what's his name? The DM just looks at him and goes, fuck you. Because, that, you know, it's that it, you know. You just as a DM, make sure that you have a list of names that are just throwaway. Yeah. They are just there to be like, it's Francois Bernand. There you go. That's your shopkeep. And then two sessions later, they're, remember Francois? Who the fuck is Francois?
So I go the direct opposite. And anybody that's playing any campaigns with me will know this. They'll be like, what's the name of random NPC that Tom did not come up with the name with? It's always Steven.
That's a good name.
It's just Steven.
And I think that's legitimate.
Or Stefan. Sometimes Stefan, but Stephanie, usually just Steven.
Female?
No. You know, you spell Steven with a PH instead of a... You have a V, yeah.
I think that's actually legitimate in a slightly cheeky way. Because it just serves as a signpost to your characters. This person doesn't actually matter. And, like, that's okay.
So then I'm going to name, like...
It's a good flag.
Then I'm going to name the main big bad...
Steven.
Steven the Sorcerer.
Or, like, a cult of Steven.
So yeah, the cult of Steven.
At the end.
Well, I go even farther myself.
I feel like this
myself.
Is, like, a Nurse Joy and Officer Jenny.
Oh, yeah,
NPC.
From Pokemon.
I like it.
Yep.
My cousin. From City.
Also named Steven.
Jenny.
We look all alike.
I go even farther myself, and I encourage other DMs to do the same. As long as you have players that you have a good trust cooperation relationship with, allow them to fill in details.
Yeah.
That's totally fine. Yeah. Your players can... for random stuff, your players can just make it up themselves.
Name.
Yeah. Yep.
They can even make up like backstories for random NPCs if they want.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And as the DM, take a couple of notes. Maybe you can play off of it somehow. You don't have to play off of every single thing your players come up with.
Trust me, you don't want to.
No. No. But sometimes you'll be able to, and it can lead to some really interesting stories.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, if a player is pursuing something and you need to send them to a random village somewhere, the player can just name the village. They can tell you what races are there. That's fine.
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely.
I don't know if I wrote this question down, but the question that I have for the three of you is, what's like the biggest pet peeve as a DM? Like, what's the one thing that you're just like, fuck you, man?
You know what? I'll go first. My biggest pet peeve is players that have played long enough and this is a sign of a bad, or either a very new player or a very bad player.
Okay.
And that is, I see something on the board and I know what it is. As a player, metagaming. Metagaming is my number one pet peeve.
Yeah.
Like, I had a player who's brand new, as an example. And I'll throw him under the bus a little bit here if he hears me. And I'm sorry, Mike, but he's a very new player, like third session play. And on the map, I had a zombie, and it was obviously a zombie. I play on so you play on Roll20. I play on on Foundry VTT, which is another tabletop system. And so I have a zombie icon, and I'm like, you see people gathered around a fire and they're doing something. They're just action. You're too far away to actually know.
Yeah.
And his character was like, oh, I smell death upon the air, or I smell like rotting flesh. Well, I didn't give any other description other than there's people around a fire.
Yeah.
You wouldn't know what it is. And I was trying to, as the DM, be like, hey, it's not what I said.
Yeah.
It's not what you see or smell. And he kind of kept going with it, kept pushing it. I was like, no, you know, and I made the point of being like, as the DM, I was like, hey, you don't get that. You don't see that. This is what you're seeing. This is what you know. As the player, you know what something is. As a character, you do not.
Yeah.
And that's perfectly fine to have some player knowledge, because there's a ton of players that are DMs and DMs that are players and whatever. You're going to know stat blocks and whatever else. That's fine. But having that meta knowledge and having it cross over is really bad. In his case, he's a brand new player, so he doesn't know better. He hasn't done this before. He doesn't understand.
Yeah.
So in his mind, he as the player can see the thing, therefore the thing is the thing. I should prepare for that thing. But if you have an abusive player, or a player that is trying to metagame it through and being like, well, I don't want to go there because it's evil looking. I know something bad's going to be in that thing up there, that tower up there, because it looks evil and the DM's kind of describing in a creepy way. Of course I'm not going to go in there, because that's dumb. But it doesn't advance the story in a way, because they're like, oh, as a player, bad thing. It doesn't make it fun.
Mm-hmm.
It removes the agency of the other players, as well as the DM for your own game, technically. That's mine.
You're trying to win D&D.
Yeah, you're trying to win D&D, and realistically, no one wins D&D. You're telling a story.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, so it wins when the players win as a whole.
Yeah, when you get really experienced. I think the metagaming thing is either for, like, total chodes, or new players do that a lot, because they're, you know, most people, when they're coming into D&D, they're coming from, like, a video game type background, right? There's a specific world, it's you versus the world, and you're trying to win. So you use that meta knowledge, because that's how you win the game. But experienced players, I think, get over that relatively quickly, and eventually you make a lot of jokes about it. You're like, oh, I guess I'll go into that big creepy dungeon all by myself. But the character still doesn't. So I think experience helps solve that one.
And to that, and experience is the teacher, because I know that player now has learned from his mistakes. And he even asks, he's like, okay, how do I approach this in the future? How do I, as a player, not do that faux pas? And it was like, oh, that's really easy. You just don't, like, go off of what the DM describes and only that. Now, as a player, you can be like, them some fucking zombies over there. That looks creepy as shit.
Yeah.
But don't let that bleed into the character where you now have to try and make decisions that your character is going to make. Yeah. And having the player knowledge versus character knowledge is a very distinctive line in the sand.
So I think, too, with that, it is okay for players, once their character has witnessed a type of monster a second or a third or a fourth time, where they would have that knowledge.
Absolutely.
So, like, yeah, if they've ran into zombies four different times, they're going to be like, yeah, oh, you guys smell that? Remember the last, you know, remember a couple, 2 days ago when we came to that campfire? Right, yeah. Yeah, perception check. You're like, do I smell it on the air or something like that? So, yeah, that's definitely okay. So my pet peeve, and I don't even know if I might even be a little responsible for this as a character, but I don't like the Mary Sue main character, especially at level one.
Yeah.
The character where you're like, yeah, I have this entire deep background, and basically I'm a level one character, but I'm slightly more efficient in combat than a farmer is, realistically. Mm. And I think we talked about that in one of your creation ideas.
Yeah.
And like I said, I know in the past I have been 100% guilty of this.
Mm-hmm.
All these things that I bitch about as players, I try to keep in mind when I'm a player and, like, at least remember, yeah, don't be the Edgelord, don't be the Mary Sue. But, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe Mike would have more fill-in for that.
You didn't like my Edgelord character.
I didn't like your Edgelord character. It was a little too edgy. I didn't like the Edgelord, and I didn't like the Mary Sue. The Mary Sue sorcerer that was, like, the greatest sorcerer in the world.
Oh,
he didn't want to, like, take his father's mantle, so he's, you know, that one of that character. I'm running away from it. But, Mike, what do you think? Am I guilty of the Mary Sue?
Not that I've seen.
Okay.
You are very good at making characters. And there is definitely a certain archetype of character that you make, at least over the last 4 or 5 years we've been playing D&D together.
What is my archetype?
Yeah, I'm curious.
And you like to play the hero.
I do like, yeah. No, I do like
and
being...
And there's nothing wrong with that.
I like being a good... Yeah.
I think too many players actually run from the idea of just the classical hero, and you embrace it, and that's totally fine.
Yeah.
It's actually kind of new because nobody else does it.
Yeah.
Because everyone's afraid of being cliche.
Right.
But it's not actually a cliche. It's okay to just be a hero. Like, that's cool.
Yeah, I think there's a difference between being a hero and being like the straight Mary Sue, like I am the main character.
Exactly.
And that, well, I think it's also a group dynamic.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I think you and I in our groups are most of the time the mainer characters.
Yes.
Just because we enjoy role-playing, we enjoy character building more.
We're very outgoing.
We're extroverts. Mm-hmm. And so I think just naturally our personalities reflect into our characters a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what but then again, I'm always like, oh, God, you know, these guys are just like, yeah, we'll go along with whatever you're saying. But I'm like, am I being the driving force, or am I just the one that, you know, are they just fine being the follower, you know what I mean?
We've talked about that as players as well when we were playing in other people's campaigns together. We have to make a conscious effort sometimes to be inclusive of the other characters.
Yes.
We manufacture opportunities for the other characters in the party to make sure they get their chance in the spotlight as well.
Yeah, I know we did that a lot in Rogue Trader, where mm-hmm. anytime that we were playing, our two players that really didn't like the role-playing aspect as much, they'd play along, but they'd purposely be like, we'd be like, oh yeah, your Rogue Trader says, hey, you know what, you're the Arch-Militant, you know, whoever, or you're the tech priest, you need to go talk to the Adeptus Mechanicus.
Mm-hmm.
Right there, you know, it makes sense that you're the tech priest, so we like basically in a DM NPC role like force them to be like, you're the,
yeah.
You know, or it'll be like, oh, you know, I'll defer to your judgment as the Archmilitant, or I'll defer to your, you know, judgment as the Paladin or whatever.
Yeah.
And so, like, you can use those ways to, like, force them to roleplay a little bit more.
I feel that with my character, Turlo, in our podcast episodes.
Yeah.
I feel like he's very much like the centerpiece main character. And I was very aware of the first session, like, especially after like editing.
I do think that's the terms of your personality, though.
I do.
Your personality, yourself, and the personality of Turlo.
Yeah.
Turlo is just like the outgoing party dude, like whatever, like, yeah, let's just have a good time.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do some stuff. Let's get some gold and Viking titties. So.
Well, he's like very much like he'll take the bait, right? Like when you did the, for our campaign, the fish, there's a random lady in the water, you know, my character in that campaign was like, yep, nope, wants nothing to do with that, mostly because of their backstory and very much a cautious individual. But at that moment, I'm like,
if you were Turlo.
If I was Turlo, I'm diving into that water trying to get some fish titties.
Look at them fish titties.
Like that. And I, like, in that moment, I'm like, I wish that Turlo was here because, man, he's going to have a lot of fucking fun. Like,
that's a good job of playing your character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There is something to be said about what you as a player want out of D&D.
Mm-hmm.
Because we. In my group that I DM for and I've played with for years, there are some that want to role play, be the center of attention. They make more mainline characters. They're the ones that are a little more driving force. They get into the story. They get into the characters. They get into the personalities. They do all these things, right? They act as their characters do. Some people are just there for beer, friends, and rolling dice, and if D&D happens along the way, all the better.
Yeah.
They don't care about... It's not necessarily that they don't care, but they don't do voices, they don't get into the characterization, they don't get into who they could potentially be.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's not as important to them.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, all sorts between. Like, we poked fun at one of our friends who was gone for a week, and we put a box in his spot with a little, like, sound speaker where his head would be, and we're like, oh, it's like Kyle was here the whole time, you know. That was the joke, right?
Yeah.
But, and you know, it's all in good fun, but however, that's not his thing. My buddy Kyle's whole thing is like, I'm just showing up and having a good time.
Yeah.
I'm here to roll dice and drink some beer and laugh and party with the rest, you know. To an earlier point where about the Mary Sue, you can also embrace it really strongly. So I have someone that's playing right now where he made the character specifically to be the hero of his village.
Mm-hmm.
He is the hero because a goblin like accidentally tripped into the village, and then he was the only one that was standing there with like a pitchfork for the brief moment, and then like the goblin tripped or turned around to run away, tripped on a rock, and then killed itself because it had to hit the ground. And so he's the hero of Meadowford. And he did literally nothing, but he claimed, you know, everybody praised him as the hero. So he got like this big ego complex. So every single time he's like, well, I'm the, you know, who are you? Well, I'm Eldon, the hero of, you know, and never, the running joke right now is that he never remembers his own village name. So it's like, you know, it's Meadowford, but he's like, I'm the hero of British Shire. And everybody's like, oh. Well, you can help us with this. He's like, absolutely I can. He is way, way underwater, way over his head in any situation. But like leaning into it is fun too. So you can do parodies without getting in trouble either.
That reminds me of our gnome character.
Our current
remember
one?
A little side quest that we did with Dan?
Yep.
So I had a character, his name was, he self-appointed himself the Reeve or the Sheriff of this gnome village. Nobody elected him whatsoever. And his name was Reeve Umbar Silvercloak. And like, he like insisted constantly that everyone call him Reeve. And he was so unimportant. But he thought he was the greatest, like he thought he was like the savior of the village and everything. Yeah, so like I agree. Like when you when you embrace the tropes and make a joke out of it, it's okay.
When it's like all in good fun.
Yeah, right.
There's a character that I am playing in Baldur's Gate, and that's like Baldur's Gate 3 is like a good like place to kind of practice your character.
I was going to say, get your feet wet.
Yeah.
It's a good place to get your feet wet, do some things a little safe, you know.
It doesn't quite work with every character. It didn't work with Maturlo character.
Yeah. It doesn't work for everything, but it's a good place.
But one character I have, it reminds me of like the village hero. I had a character, I named him Proxus, Dragonborn Barbarian. And the idea was, from an early age, this trickster god, I don't really have a name for it, tricked the village into thinking that he was going to grow up to be this great leader. And the idea was, like, this character walks around, he has, like, this Thanos-like complex that he is going to be, not like a savior, but he's going to be a leader, he's going to be, basically he has big cock energy.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
He, like, I have it, I know it, I'm going to do it. And I'm like, but I'm like, thinking in terms of like D&D, Baldur's Gate 3, it's fun to play because like anytime anyone challenges him, he's just like, all right, well, fuck you, I'll just fucking murder you.
Yeah, exactly.
Asterion tried biting him. I'm like, well, yep, he's not going to be part of my party. Like, it just doesn't work to...
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But I'm like, for a D&D campaign, I'm like, I don't know if this character would work. I question if he would work because like, in his mind, everybody follows him. He is the leader. He is the one. I'm like, I don't know if he would be a fun D&D.
So, yes and no, because it can be. However, you as the player have to understand when to tone it down because it's detrimental to the group.
Yeah.
Versus when it's fun because it's a fun trope. I played in one where one of my buddies was, we were playing all orphans. And that was how we all knew each other. We were through the same orphanage. And one of them, his name was Ramon. Ramon Hernandez Star Dancer, who was a bard who thought that he was the hottest shit this world had ever seen. He okay. was, everybody wanted him. The ladies wanted him nonstop. Everybody wanted to listen to him play nonstop. I played as his manager, as the rogue. So right. I was the one that was falling behind him and being like, yeah, you're totally the best thing ever. Don't worry about it. Anyway, I'm going to go out in the crowd and like steal everyone's stuff. And he's like, oh, but they love me. They love me. Of course they love me. Well, he's playing this idiot almost leadership role because he thinks that he's the most important person, but he's not.
Yeah.
Now, in that case, if you are that player, if you do want to play that role, I would say as the player, you need to understand that there has to be someone else in the party that is willing to pull you around, that is willing to go, yeah, 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 go be important over there while we do the big boy stuff over here. Mm. Like, don't you worry about it. We'll take care of this. This is well beyond you. This is well beneath you. Don't worry about it. But you need to be able to have that happen or have a distraction or have a reason to go to something mm-hmm. so that you're not detrimental to the party.
Yeah.
So that people don't like go, God, just play a character that we like. Please. Mm. For the love of God, I don't care about this character because all they want to do is be like, ah, fuck you guys. Because you need a reason to be with the party.
Yeah.
So having a connection or someone that can like really talk to you, mm-hmm. like knows you behind the scenes of like, I'm really worried about this you know, you put on the strong man face, but behind the scenes you're like really worried that you're not the one kind yeah. of thing, you know.
That's the character creation episode that I did with, like, there was the two that you didn't like, the sorcerer that's from a, you know.
The noble lineage sorcerer?
Yeah, that doesn't want to be a sorcerer, or the gnome evil bard that just yeah. wants to essentially put evil thoughts into most people's heads and be like the character, like, hey, you should rough that person up, but hey. I've been, like, reworking those characters. I'm like, I need to figure out ways to, like, actually throw it at the party.
And I can't remember if I said it during that episode, but I was like, you can play that character, but that is a, you know, that is an advanced level character to play.
Yeah.
That is not a first character to yes. play. Those complicated characters that have those quirks, you know, and things like that, you gotta have a little bit more of an advanced player, I feel like, well, in order to pull that off.
The Edgelord yeah. character, the one that I like made, Greta Turnkiss is the random name I went with.
Yep.
The idea was she is a gnome who was part of a slave trade, like watched your parents die, learn to be a bard from her grandfather. But basically when she was freed, she realized that the world knew exactly what was happening to her people and pretty much was like, well, fuck the world. Like, fuck everybody else. But, and that's where I'm like, oh, evil bard wants evil things to happen to these people because she basically wants the world burned. And now I'm rethinking, I'm like, that's just the outer personality. That is her outer personality. The inner personality is she wants what she never had, which is her family. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, she wants, like, she's part of the party to be connected to those people. Outward-wise, she's just tough, I don't give a fuck about you. But, like, I'm still going to hang around. Very much, like, wants to be belonging. Wants, secretly wants peace, but talks wants chaos.
No.
And I'm like, that's a character, it's like, that would be a tough character to play.
Yes. As I said, that's like, there definitely are advanced characters that you can play, and there's, you know, there's definitely easy ones to play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about Slum, though, too. I'm like, man, this character, like, was this from this world that is completely opposite of me and is trying to come to their own, and I'm like, I have not figured out that character yet. Mm. And, like, I'm getting there, but I'm like, it's a journey, but I'm like, you know, it's a part of the journey. It's like...
Yeah, I don't think your character is too complicated. I would say it's an excellent...
It's a good beginner intermediate one.
Yeah, medium intermediate. Yeah.
But it's like finding that character's personality. Like, it's trying to work my personality into that character, but, like, also having that character grow.
And I think we've only played, realistically, two sessions. Two or three sessions.
We had a session zero, yeah. Three sessions total.
So I think that you are just naturally going to find your story.
Yeah.
And that's okay. You don't have to know exactly what your character is set in stone when the campaign starts.
But it was a challenge for me, I will say that.
Like, my last character that we played during our long 2.5 year,
something like that, yeah.
Pretty long campaign. I was like, I wrote him as a young, womanizing, you know, like, partier that likes, you know, he wants money, he wants fame, and just, I don't know why, just naturally he evolved, all of a sudden he fell in love with this NPC, and, like, slowly random things happened where he would just be like, oh, you know what, I'm going to take it a little slow tonight, you know, whatever, and then, like, every time we'd go back to our home base, he would be talking up this person, where normally he's just, like, anything that has, you know, tits, he's talking to, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just some random thing that'll come to you, and you'd be like, you know what? This seems right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I formed this connection with this NPC, or, you know, I saw this thing happen, and then all of a sudden you're just going to, like, get into your groove.
Yeah. That's how I feel, like, with Turlo. It's easy to, like, I never know, like, what the idea is or what, like, he's thinking, but in the moment it's just natural.
That's a perfect way to play.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, in addition to that being the player for wanting that to happen or having that excitement to be like, this feels right, it also presents that you as the DM. You as the DM have to also decide, okay, I'm going to toss some NPCs out. And if there is a character or a player that really attaches themselves to one or like a place or a thing or something like that, you as the DM have to take notice of that and play with it. And you know, reintroduce it.
By
make
kidnapping
sure.
them.
Huh?
By kidnapping them and setting them on fire.
Exactly.
In front of the character.
Exactly, yeah.
Now, that was a callback to the start of the episode.
Yeah. Well, so
comedy 101.
Amusingly, if you want players to absolutely derail your campaign, I had one where there's a key person that the players kidnapped that's like the broken daughter of this noble person in a town, and I'm frantically trying to figure out what the fuck to do because they got her out and they passed every check, and I'm like, okay, what do we do now? And I'm going through notes, and they're like, aha, stump the DM. We got him. I'm like, I don't think you guys understand the gravity of the situation that you just put yourselves into. And that, so as the cold realization, like, sweeps over them, they're like, oh, fuck. Okay, because now they're now they what's funny is that now that they're responsible for another person, another NPC, they care more. Mm. And so even the neutral evil rogue who's completely selfish, that he was the one that kidnapped this girl, this woman, and like suddenly has a soft spot for her.
It's growth.
It's weird because, you know, he was like, no, we should give her back for the ransom money. And everybody's like, what the fuck is wrong with you? And he's like, what? You know, and then as time goes on and as she starts to become more and more engrossed into the group and more discussion is happening about it behind the scenes, suddenly the player starts to soften towards that NPC. You know, so there's a bit of that, too.
You totally had that plan, didn't you?
Fuck no.
You know, sorry that derailed your story overall, but I love it when stuff like that
happens. I mean,
that's the best moment ever.
It is, because that's the most memorable moments, because I guarantee you that this whole arc that should not have happened, technically should never have happened, is all player driven. It will be the most memorable thing because it was up to them. They made the choices and they did something that was completely off the rails. And if they ask anyone else that has played Curse of Strahd, like, what happened with so-and-so? They'll be like, oh, she was in a room and we left her there. And they're going to be like, what do you mean left her there? We you know, saved her from her family and got her cured and helped heaven and earth.
What the hell's wrong with you?
Yeah, exactly. We had a conscience, and oddly enough, the neutral evil rogue had a conscience for 5 minutes, and like, you know, but I guarantee you that as we pull back, if they get her healed, my goal is to basically turn her around and make her be this tool for revolution in the town, and like she will be a catalyst for everything to come because they made the choice.
Yeah.
Now originally that wasn't going to be the case. But it's much more impactful using an NPC that they love to bring about wild change.
Yeah. So my question is, as a DM, do you, obviously you don't plan on every detail, but do you like go in with a good idea of what you want to do with the campaign? Or is it like more of a session by session thing for instances like that?
So for Curse of Strahd, it's fairly cut and dry.
Yeah.
They show up. There's a bad guy, you kill the bad guy, you leave. I mean, Curse of Strahd is very straightforward, and like, here's the exact story arcs that you're going to be doing. That's a pre-written campaign. Some pre-written campaigns, no. Some of them are very wide open, open-ended, or quest-driven, or something like that. Some of them have a definitive end. But if it's homebrew, it's like, just go wild. Sometimes you just, it's quest, you know, day to day, quest to quest. I know one group that I'm running in doesn't want a storyline overall, so they're just, everything's ad hoc. They work for a guild and they get missions, and then they go on the mission, and everything is basically a one shot with repeatable characters.
Nice. You know, that's how D&D started.
Yeah,
all the way up into AD&D, there almost there was only one shots. You know, two, maybe three sessions.
Monster of the week. You know,
yeah.
Like that's that was like something I was played. Interested. Yeah. I know that we have not said anything for you, Tom, but like I feel like for a D&D as a player, it'd be very much Monster Week, except for you two, because you're running a campaign that I'm part of. Yeah, just like the idea of like, oh, what random adventure we're going to go off of, and it's like...
It's, I will say, it's fun when you're starting.
Yeah.
Getting your feet under your... here's a good example of things to do for like, in my opinion, when you want to try new characters. One-shots are great because you can build a character and be like, this is the personality I'm going to try and play. Try it on for size, like a pair of pants. See if you like it. Nothing lost. Maybe a session or two, whatever. But if you're going to do that, it kind of gets old fast because you don't... In those cases of like Monster of the Week, it's like, okay, I know how this is going to play out. I know what this story is going to be. Sometimes it's just the fun of rolling the dice. That's fine. But if you want something that's more involved, more story, more interesting,
then
you have to kind of get into something deeper than that.
Yeah, and I think like my want would be like, if the way as a player that I imagine it, like first coming in, first of all, for both of your stories, I want whatever you have planned initially. So this is like my wants for you guys. But just like going into a story, very much like, the idea of like random missions, Monster of the Week, and then turning it into like it becomes a bigger thing. Like the big threat comes in, whatever that is. and it becomes involved story.
Yeah, I agree. I think there is an, like, I feel like the first, I don't know, half dozen sessions are probably going to be a monster of the week type of thing until until the characters find something that they bite onto and they get attached to, and then you kind of can just, especially with homebrews, you know, you find the thing that they're attached to, and then you kind of just go with whatever the character, the players are interested in. Mm-hmm. So
I think that really just depends on the DMs and the players as well, and that's a thing you can discuss when you're, you know, initially going to start the campaign, is like, you know, as the DM, what are you expecting? What do you want to do? You know, because I like running these. I love running one shots actually a lot.
Yeah.
But I just decided that I wanted to run a big story arc, which is what I'm doing right now with you guys, Call from the Deep. Prior to that, I had only run one shots for the last 3-4 years. I'd only run like one kind of longer single story. And that story was only 6, maybe 7 sessions long. Before that, I hadn't run any longer campaigns since like high school.
Sure.
So, you know, I made sure everybody knew we're going to run this campaign called Call from the Deep. Please don't read it. And that it was going to be kind of this long, big, epic story. But I think running a series of one-shots is perfectly valid also.
I'm excited for your story, by the way. Like,
I hope it's good.
I'm excited to be part of it. I'm happy that Tom asked, and I'm happy that I decided to do it and make it happen. I'm also excited for, we got to figure out when we're going to do our campaign, Tom. We got to figure out when we're going to do our continue our campaign.
I know that you mentioned, like, don't read this. Don't read any of this, and don't go ahead and like research all this stuff.
Yeah.
It goes back to character knowledge versus player knowledge. But I have one of the persons in my group. They were running Curse of Strahd.
Okay.
For their group.
Mm-hmm.
And so they tell me this, and I'm all excited because I'm running one, and I'm like, oh man, I'm so excited. There's someone else that's in the group, you know, that I'm friends with that's running this, and then I can finally like bounce things off of. So I handed them all of the information that I had, you know, all the resources, all the background, all of everything, everything that I ever am running. Their entire group falls apart, and they're kind of lost, and they're like, well, I would love to play it. And I was like, well, I'm going to put together another one. You want in? And they were like, absolutely, I want in. Now, they know everything that's going to happen. They understand and have, like, a terrible poker face, for one. Because I'll mention something, and I'll look at, because we're all playing remote.
Yeah.
They're in New York. And so I'll look at their screen, and they got this smirk on their face. I'm like, you know. But their character is consistent.
Yeah.
Always consistent about, we're going to go in and we're going to do this thing. Like, they're going up to this creepy, you know, windmill. They know what's coming. They know that there's 3 hags in there, and they're not going to enjoy it. But they're like, hell yeah, we're going to go. It smells great. You know, they're like, I'm having fun for the ride, because they are a part of the story. Mm-hmm. And even though they've read the information and know, a lot of times, just being a part of the story is more fun when you know what's going to happen. Even though you know what's going to happen, you know the main beats, you know what's going to happen, you know what's coming. Just being able to play along in that space is a lot of fun.
It's like rewatching a movie or replaying a game you've already played before.
Like rereading your favorite book. You know what's happening, you know what's coming, but you enjoy the ride.
Yeah.
And I think that's great for veteran players.
Yes.
That's not a new player
skill. No, that's not a new player skill.
We have all, well, except for you, I guess, but we have all very veteran players in my group right now. And I can trust all of my players. I'm not saying don't read it because I don't trust you to, like, you know, metagame and ruin the story. I'm saying don't read it because it's more fun to have not read it.
Yeah, that's very true.
And that's what I think of as a player. You know, I've been in campaigns with Shane specifically. We played a campaign that he was fully familiar with, and it was fine. He didn't do anything stupid. You know, he didn't ruin the game for anybody. You know, he had lots of fun with us. And I trust him to do that. The reason I make sure to tell my players what I'm running is so that it's more enjoyable for them.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's, I'm very tempted to read it because that's just me personally. But I will, like, it's one of those things where, like, yeah, maybe I don't want to know the spoiler here. Maybe I just want to experience, like, my character's experience it new, but it also as a player experience it new.
Yeah.
But Baldur's Gate 3 is another one to, I think, a good way to compare it to. For like a video game, it's like replaying Baldur's Gate 3. I already know the other place, what's to come, what choices there is to be had, but like I don't know what this character that I created is going to do.
So I'm going to bring up a point. So we played, was it Reign of the Curse of the Dragon Queen, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Whatever the Tiamat one.
Yep.
The Tiamat rewritten one, and so I had previously played the first like two chapters, right? And so I was like really worried. I was like, man, this is gonna be boring as shit, you know, because I know exactly what's gonna happen. But the way the story panned out was 100% different. You know, it's a different group of people. It's a different, you know, there's no way you can recreate the player autonomy. And so like, yeah, I played the same campaign twice, but the first two chapters were completely different from each other. Like, I was like, oh, yeah. Like, I might have known, like, oh, yeah, when I open this barn, there's going to be a bunch of dudes waiting to ambush us. But, like, the first campaign, my brother's ranger was the only one that was alive, and he was standing on top of the roof just archering people to death. Whereas when we played it the second time, we just walked in and just fucking raffle stomps these poor bastards, you know, like, so it was like literally one was life and death and the other one was like another Tuesday night, you know, type of thing. So, and again, like I said, one of those more veteran player things where you're just like, yeah, I'm going to keep it to myself. I know there's an ambush in here, but we're just going to, my character doesn't know that. We're just going to play it out. Yeah. All
right, Moser, you've been quiet. You need to get in here.
I was like, it's fine.
Give me a question, because you're an upcoming, like, DM. We're going to end this off with one more question. What do you got for the group? Yeah, take your time.
Like, I had one before, but when everyone was talking, I'm like, I had a question, and all of a sudden, now it's just gone.
Well, I could answer the previous question if you want.
Like, for, like, to keep it distance, because a lot of times, like, my DMs always ask at the end of the session, like, what can we do differently? What, like, how did you like it? And, like, and it's more of just player to DM versus, like, you know, like, how do you like this direction of how it is, of just feedback. Do you guys also do that, or is that more of
almost every session?
Yeah.
Because, like, I feel it helps both back of, like, as a asking of, like, is there something that you want me to do differently? Because I'm one of the more veteran players of, like, help everything move along, or sit back and let them learn, or because a lot of times, like, I answer the questions, and, you know, when there's something that the DM also, it's like, well, and it, say, like, Nat 20s, we helped her decide that to do rolling two dice versus doubling the dice, because that way if one dice is a one, the other dice could still be a 10,
true,
making it 11, versus you rolled the 1, you just critted and did 2 damage plus your modifier, and it's kind of like, well, that defeated the purpose of the nat 20.
I feel like, that's almost always, even if it's just a casual, like, hey, what did you guys think of that episode, or that, you know, that session, or whatever. But no, like, I am very cognizant and almost paranoid about, like, how I am as a DM.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, did that feel good? You know, did you guys enjoy that? Did it feel railroady? You know, did you like that NPC? Whatever. So, yeah, I feel like I think that's a good thing to have on both ends of it, is asking each other, like, you know, or telling each other, be like, hey, this seemed a little, you know, funny or whatever. This seemed railroady or this seemed that. So yeah, I think good communication is always the best thing for DMs and players both.
I like to think that I'm blessed with an excellent gaming group right now, and have been for many years. So we have pretty good communication. I, you know, trust them. They trust me. They know that they can give me feedback. Occasionally, I will put out like an anonymous survey for people to fill out as well, just in case they have something they want to say that, you know, maybe is they don't think I'd like as much. You know, just for people's comfort. But because we've been playing together so long, I feel like most people are pretty comfortable giving me feedback. Mm-hmm. At least I feel like I get plenty of valid feedback from my players. So I guess I don't solicit it as explicitly anymore. I probably should make an effort to do that a little more frequently, but I don't think I would do it every session just because we've been together so long.
I never ask for feedback. I'm perfect as a DM. I know. Thank you. I appreciate it. All my players love everything that I've ever done. And I never question it.
They love being railroaded.
Yeah. Right up until I burn every single one of their characters to the ground. It's great. No, I actually, I ask for feedback almost every session. Just like, hey, I had a lot of fun. Hopefully you guys did too, that kind of thing. I might make it more casual.
Yeah,
oftentimes it's that. And sometimes it's just as much as like a thumbs up. Like, yeah, it was a great time. Some people give feedback of like, that was a really funny session. I had a great time, a lot of laughs. Typically, you can kind of read the room as it is too in those moments. But in a lot of ways, I think that having positive feedback towards your DM is really good. And being able to like offer praise, offer feedback, critiques, you know, thoughts, you know, like, hey, I didn't, you know, especially if like you feel like you're getting railroaded, approach, say, hey, I feel like I'm getting pushed around. I don't really enjoy that, or I don't enjoy the direction that my character is even going in. Can we try and change something? Work with your DM to try and see about it. One of the things that I've recently been doing was I felt like things were stalling out with one of my groups. And I talked to two of the individuals that I play with that I trust. And I was like, I trust all my gamer group again. That's kind of how it is. But two of them were over for beers. And I was like, hey, I got a question. You know, I need to know what you guys think. Am I being railroady? Are things dying a little bit? Should we take a break? And, you know, and they were able to give very raw, real feedback and going how they felt about everything, what was going on, maybe a direction that I could go and bring them in. Hey, is there an option that we have available to us? You know, because I was saying, oh, well, do you find this interesting? Is this an interesting take on it? You know, is this quest line cool? They're like, it's okay. I like where we're going with it, but if we could kind of work in this other character that we know about, would that work? Oh, yeah. And, you know, you can workshop somewhat with your players because, again, they're telling the story as well as you are.
Yeah.
It's not like you have to be super secretive about everything. You can show some of the cards and go, hey, I'm stuck. I need help. Because sometimes they'll be able to help you. Sometimes they might not.
Yeah.
But, you know, feedback comes in all forms, good, bad, and otherwise. And yeah, I really like feedback as a DM to get information back because it's a story that we're all telling.
Yeah.
Right.
I'd agree with that. I think from my experience, you two have been, Tom, Mike, you've been, I feel like after every session, you're always asking, well, how is it going? What's the campaign like?
Yeah, I at least ask, like, did you guys have fun tonight? At least that's, like, the minimum that I ask. Sometimes I'm like, hey, you know, did you feel blah, blah, you know, what'd you think about this quest line? You know, it might be more in-depth, but usually it's just a casual, hey, would you guys, you know, did you have fun? Everybody have fun at least? Hmm. And I hope everyone's honest. If they're just like, yeah, this is great.
Yeah.
Because if you tell me it's good, it's great. I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing, and then you're going to keep being unhappy.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. All right. I think we have to wrap it up. Thank you guys for coming on.
Thank you.
This bonus episode of Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah.
Great
thanks
time.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you. So, thank you, Mike Bingo Rogers.
Oh, yeah.
Alex Struck Hit Hunt. Tom, Drunker Than You Are Chatfield.
I'm sobering up now.
Justin Man in the Chair Moser. I don't even have a nickname for myself. I am your host, Jake the Host, Sherbang. All right. And That's a wrap.